feel the fear and do it anyway.
Good things come to those who work hard and never give up.
Be better than you were yesterday.
Don't compare your chapter one to someone else's chapter 20.
Be the best version of yourself because somebody else has already taken.
Don't be afraid to go the extra mile because when you do, you realise there aren't that many people out there.
Hello and welcome to She Has a Goal in Mind, brought to you each week by Darcy Morris and Gabriella Jukes. In this episode, we're joined by an England rugby star and trailblazer, Sarah Byrne. Join us as we explore her journey from aspiring downhill skier to powerhouse tighthead prop, breaking barriers in rugby, her passion for musical theatre, and how she uses her platform for purpose. I think, obviously, you're a very inspiring woman yourself, and we're very excited to know a bit more about your story. So if we just go straight into it, if you're happy, can you just tell us a bit more about your background, where you've come from, and kind of where it all began for you?
When I was younger, I just really enjoyed sports. I found English and maths, I wasn't like terrible at them, but it didn't come very naturally to me. I was like then diagnosed with dyslexia and just struggled with getting confidence in that, because when you're young, that's kind of the avenue where you have to try and get people judge you for it, essentially. So being little and not very good at like the kind of normal standard things that you get measured at. For me, it didn't matter and where I really excelled, as well as art. So they're the two subjects that I really just took under my wing and just went for, and they're very much subjective. It's all about hard work and kind of how you approach things. So I played a lot of sport when I was younger. Played all sorts in school, athletics, like every single club of that, athletics, netball, all that kind of stuff. And then my cousin was really close in age with me, and we used to play similar sports, and he started playing rugby. So I went down to the local rugby team, and they were like, we're missing a player. Do you want to join in or whatever? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to give that a go. And at first the boys didn't pass the ball to me or anything. They were like, oh, girl on the team. That's so weird. Then I think one time I managed to pick up the ball and ran the length of the pitch. And then since then they were like, yeah, pass the ball to Sarah. So that's kind of where my rugby journey started. And it was just something I was naturally good at that age, and just really loved and enjoyed. And I've got some really good friends from there. And that's kind of it. I followed that passion through. It became a lot more kind of serious. I went to Hartbury, where I did my full-time rugby program alongside my education. And through that process, I was in like the talent development groups. I was in under 20s. And then in 2017, I got called in to change positions, firstly from a back row to a front row, but also then to go to the World Cup. And I was only meant to go to the World Cup in 2017 as a kind of passenger, someone to learn, get an experience. But due to some serious injuries before, which were really unfortunate, I ended up having to start, I think, most of the games by one. So it was kind of thrown in the deep end. And that was it. That was then where I kind of managed to stay and continue to work hard and keep trying to get better at. So yeah, that's kind of a brief version of it.
You've had an amazing journey so far. It's right that you were one of the youngest, or the youngest, I suppose, in the team at that 2017 World Cup. How was that for you to get thrown into something like that? I guess like you didn't expect to be starting as much as you did, and I suppose perform as well at such a young age. You were 20. How was that for you?
It was, I think at the time, I just remember being like, wow, look at all these players that I'm with, like these players that I watched growing up. There's players from other nations in the 20s, around the 2014, 2010 World Cup that came and trained me when I was like 13 years old. So and that was from New Zealand, that's from all different nations. I remember there were some American players that I thought were really cool as well. So when I actually was there, it didn't really sink in. I just wanted to play well. That was it. I just wanted to prove that, you know, I'm good enough to be here. Even though I definitely didn't know anything about scrums, didn't know absolutely anything at all. But I was just trying my best that whole time. So For me, it definitely didn't sink in until kind of the years afterwards. And there was a PowerPoint. I remember one time in a meeting, and it was like, this is what we want the players to be. And it was like a picture of me and my best friend Zoe, who both kind of come in at that same period. And we were a bit like, what? Like, we're just kind of just not winging it, essentially, but we were just there to like just trying our best. So I think it wasn't until the few years after and the media really pick up on it that you're like, oh, wow, like I actually did a good job there. And like you kind of, even now, probably not until now, though, oh, that was actually pretty cool thing to do and give yourself a pat on the back. But when you're in it, it's hard to see what you're doing. You just think it's another day of hard work, essentially.
Did you face any challenges when initially breaking into the rugby scene, you know, like as I know it's become much better now, but traditionally rugby's seen as, you know, a male dominated sport. And how was that for you coming through at a young age?
I think, yeah, I personally didn't have any, well, I had a few things. I had, when I was first ever joining the rugby team and they had all their players, like 11 years old, 10 years old, this other team needed some players and they went, oh, you can have Sarah, she doesn't really know too many of the rules, but she's a good player. And I remember the rugby coach, he had this pad and he was like, right, just hit me as hard as you can. And I was like, all right. So I hit him and he literally went flying, did a backwards roll and fell over. And I think he got up like, yep, yeah, that's good enough. So I think it's just that general, that first little bit of the stereotype you go in and they're a bit like, oh, it's a girl, we'll try a little bit less or whatever. And then they realise actually you're just as strong as the boys. Like particularly at that age, like there's barely a difference when you're that little. And then when I started to go through, I guess when I went to secondary school, if that's kind of the age group where you find like people are kind of maturing, they're different groups of people, different types of people, you feel quite heavily judged or the need to fit in. So I actually didn't tell anyone I played rugby for like my whole of year seven. I just was scared that people would be like, oh, like that's such a manly sport, or why do you play that? But then actually I remember I had some really amazing PE teachers and they were like, yeah, let's start a rugby team, like let's start sport. And they really encouraged me to kind of, it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks. They were a bit like, it's something you enjoy, it's something you're really good at, there's nothing to be shy about, like let's promote it. And they definitely, that whole PE department like kind of helped me to be a bit like, yeah, who actually cares? And I told one of my mates at the time, and I was really nervous, she was going to judge me, and she was like, oh, that's well cool. She was like, now if anyone picks on me, I'll just send them over to you. And I was like, no. But it was interesting because it was like no one had ever said anything to me. It was just my own perception of what it was. I feel like it's kind of, when you're at that age, it's kind of society's perception of what a girl should be or how you should look. And it doesn't matter if you play sport or not. I think that's a huge pressure, particularly now with social media as well. So that was kind of the first thing. And then just breaking through the scene, it's kind of like, I've always had a quite positive experience. There's only been a few like, oh, who's that girl, rugby is for men and stuff like that. Or it's probably more apparent now, to be honest, that I'm more heavily involved and more of an advocate and more involved in kind of those bigger picture arguments than when I was going through my initial career of just wanting to play rugby, just enjoying it. But yeah, I would say it's probably a constant undertone of a theme that's run through my whole career. I think anyone in sport would probably have women's sport particularly, would kind of have a similar thing. However, I've noticed a massive change in the last few years. Just how, to be honest, it is generally men look at women's sport. Sometimes some other women are like, oh God, I wouldn't ever do that. I wouldn't let my daughter play that. But I think now we're doing a really good job as the Red Roses to promote that. It literally doesn't matter. You can be big, you can be small, you can be girly, you can be, you know, more tomboy. Literally doesn't matter. You can just be whoever you are. And I think that's why we're getting a really good positive change now.
Yeah. 100%. I think that's such an important message to send out there. But since you made that debut in that World Cup in 2017, you certainly left your mark in the rugby world. You know, you were nominated in 2019 for Player of the Year, you were England Player of the Year as well, and nominated in 2022 Six Nations Player of the Tournament. I mean, that's incredible. Did you ever see yourself really get in, I guess, as to where you are now? Was this something you always wanted to do?
I think I have always wanted to be the best. I just wanted to work hard so I was the best. I think I've always approached, particularly when I moved from back row, I wanted to be this amazing back row player, like, you know, Maggie Alfonsi was, or at that time. When I changed into front row, for me, it was, again, it was about perception. It was like, I don't want to be in the front row. That's lazy, that's big. And you kind of think about kind of the really, really old school rugby guys just at the bar with pints in their hands. And I was like, no, I want to be an athlete. I've always wanted to be an athlete, no matter what that was in. Like, I used to want to be a downhill skier. Literally, I've just always wanted to be an athlete. So for me, that was kind of the farthest thing from it. And it wasn't until the coach shut me down and you went, I want you to be you, but I just want to teach you something else to add to your bow. I want to teach you how to scrummage. And when I looked at it like that, I thought, yeah, that's actually really cool. That's kind of, you know, it's a chance to make this role your own and however you want to play it. So he kind of gave me the freedom and confidence to learn this art. That's really difficult to learn, to be honest. It takes years. It's all about experience. And you're always learning. Someone will always do something different. The rules will change. Something will happen. You get an injury, you come back in, someone's doing something else differently. It's a constant learning in terms of that scrum piece. But in terms of everything else, yeah, like, he just was like, I just want you to play however you want to play. I want to give you that freedom to play. So I think from then on, I was like, right, everyone used to say, who do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, I'm going to be the best version of me. I had, like, people who I aspired to that worked really hard. But I didn't want to be anyone else. I just wanted to be the best version of me, which I kind of always struggled with, because you always get put in those meetings, who's your inspirer? And I used to be like, well, I just want to be the best I can be ever. Full stop. no windows, no ceilings, nothing. Like, and even now, like, I was joking the other day with one of the other staff members at Bristol. I was like, yeah, I've been practicing my grubbers. And they were like, what? Why are you doing that? And I was like, well, if there's ever an opportunity where I have to do it, I want to be able to know that, you know, I've given it some thought. So yeah, that's kind of how I see my role now. And I just love it. I love, and I hope it inspires other people to be like, you don't have to be something. You can make it whatever you want it to be. It can be tailored to you.
I love that. And you can make it your own thing and put your own stamp on it as well. Am I right in saying that you were part of the first wave of women to get a professional contract?
Yeah. We were. First contract came in end of 2016, I believe, start of 2017. 8-month contract leading into the World Cup, which was in the July or August period. So they were tiny, tiny, teeny, tiny amounts. I was a student, so I was bang on the bottom one. I was also brand new and probably wasn't of hardly any value at that point. Kind of probably more of a wild card and a gamble. So, they were the first round. And then I remember that happening. And then we got an email saying, oh, our contracts are, that's it, done. That's your contract's done. Go back into the real world. Now, you didn't win the World Cup. And we were all like, what? Like, surely not. Surely that doesn't work. We had a really good team of people, Danielle Waterman, who still fights now, Tamara Taylor, a few other players that were in that group that really pushed it forward. And we managed to get our contracts back later that year. I think it was 2018, 2019. We got our full round, and they said, no, this time we want to do it sustainably, and it's going to be forever now. This is going to be it. And luckily, yeah, since that point, I've managed to maintain my contracts and still be involved in the England side, and now part of the group that, when I was first contracted, were fighting so hard for us. I'm now part of that group fighting so hard for the next generations, the next round of contracts. Because, same again, I don't believe that women would be treated too differently. I know it's a lot down to commercial aspects, but in terms of, yeah, we should keep growing the sport, we should keep pushing, we should keep asking for more, because that's what our sport's doing. It's the fastest growing sport in the world. So I think, yeah, we should definitely keep trying to push those boundaries a little bit more.
You know, you mentioned there about, you know, your contract's ended because you didn't win the World Cup and only came back. That would never have happened in the men's game. So isn't that just crazy to hear that they thought, you know, yeah, we didn't win the World Cup, so like, goodbye, your contract. So, you know, that's just crazy to hear, really.
Yeah. I think at the time, I think if you play a women's sport, a lot of the time you do ask yourself, going, I don't know if the men would get treated like that. And a lot of the time it comes down to commercialising our sport money, which again is a massive fair argument. We've got to generate more people to come and we've got to try and generate more investment. And it is happening. It's happening really quickly, to be honest, over the last 5 years. There's still a long way to go. But from, you think about 2017 until, well, now, it's under 10 years, it's moved leaps and bounds. But yeah, there's definitely still a few things now. Like there was one thing recently, went to a kit shoot and they go, oh, we only have a size 14, up to a size 14. And you're like, well, why? You've got a whole group of players here, international professional people who gym every day. They have to be a certain weight. They have to do a certain job. But you're only catering for like half of them. You're like, but they had all the men's kit. So it's like, you know, there's still minor battles. But as a whole, it's got way better.
That's good to hear that it's definitely improving.
Yeah, and I think obviously the professional contracts have obviously helped the game as well. And hopefully it will keep progressing onwards.
Yeah, definitely. I hope so. Will you see Wales, Scotland, Ireland all now having professional contracts? Other nations having to invest in their women, because other nations are, you have the likes of France who really heavily invest, they get amazing crowds to games. You have New Zealand who, you know, got a world record beating crowd at the World Cup. Sorry, that's a sentence. That's a hell of a sentence to say. And then you see, you know, England, we come over, we got 60,000 at Twickenham. So it's there and it's forcing other unions to invest. And you'll see these players absolutely flourish in the pro environment. You have Alicia Butcher, the professional player, absolutely amazing here at Bristol. The likes in all other nations, I could name so many players. But I think it's just helping push our sport and it's making those games more competitive. And it is coming to a point now where you're going, oh, I don't know who's going to win this one. This is going to be close. But if we can get every single game like that, I think that's really where we want to aim for.
Yeah, 100%. I just wanted to bring up on something you have briefly mentioned it, but you know, you're known for scoring a few long range tries, sidestepping, you know, like a sevens player. That isn't typical of your position of a tight head prop. But you know, you thrive at it. And you mentioned there about, you know, you're always wanting to, I guess, put your own stamp on things. But what is that drives you to keep pushing those boundaries, particularly for the position that you do play?
To be honest, they're the things I enjoy. I grew up playing sevens. I was in the sevens program. So from, I don't know, 14, 15 years old, I wanted to play sevens. I actually remember writing in my dad's garage at the time. I wrote like Rio 2016 or something because I wanted to play sevens there. And at the same time I got contracted, well, I got invited into camp as a prop. I was actually had a phone call the day before from the sevens development coach or sevens coach at the time saying, well, can you fly out to cover our B team to play in the sevens series? And I was thinking, oh, I don't think I'm quite there yet. But then I got called and then I said, well, you guys sort it out. What do you think is going to be the best for me? Because I don't want to turn down a World Cup. But also my whole life I was fighting to kind of, you know, deal with. I was always a bigger player. I was still athletic and fast and fit. I was always bigger. So I was always fighting. I wanted to play sevens, but I never fit into that box necessarily if you were to just to look at a group of people in the room. But I went and played in the World Cup and it was probably the best thing I ever did. But that's, I always said, I remember saying to Fergie, Matt Ferguson at the time, he goes, I want you to play prop. I said, no. He went, why not? I said, because I want to play sevens. He was like, right, well, I want to take you to a World Cup. And I was like, yeah, no. And he was like, right, I'll give you a deal. And he goes, I want you to play as you play. I want to teach you how to scrum. I said, all right. I said, I'll make you a deal then. I said, I'll come and play prop. I said, but one, you have to make me the best prop in the world. And I said, two, I'm still allowed to play sevens. And we shook on it. And I haven't played sevens since 2017. So he failed that part of it. But, you know, he did put in a lot of effort with me to he speed me up, play, like learn how to scrummage really well. And he was amazing at that. So, yeah, I'm very thankful for him. But yeah, that's the element I love. That's where I want to be. That's the exciting parts that I want to be doing, learning to scrum and rep and all kind of those close quarters forward things. they're things that I know I have to do. I'll work really hard at them because, I want to be good at them because that's my job. If I can't do my job, there's no point in me being on the pitch. And then those little extra things, those pieces, they're the bits that keep you going. They're the bits of enjoyment. They're the little bits of, like, fire that keeps you working hard in those days where you think, oh, I can't be asked, or I'm tired, or I'm hurt, you know. So, yeah, that's why I love those. And my actual favourite session of the week is speed. I love it. Absolutely love it.
In terms of injuries then, I know recently you got injured. How, as a you know, professional athlete, how do you overcome that? And where do you find that resilience to keep pushing on? I know obviously physically you'd have to have rehab and things like that, but mentally as well, obviously it must take its toll on you.
Yeah, I would say I've had a few serious injuries. I had a disc issue in my back. I had a hamstring that essentially nearly tore off, was hanging on by a thread. I had a shoulder reconstruction just before the World Cup. Actually, that was quite a pressured situation. And now recently my knee, to be honest, is a bit of a freak incident. I just tore my meniscus standing up cross-legged, so don't do that. I've been told never to cross my legs again, but I think that one is hard because it's not a painful injury. Every injury is different. Every length of time is different. My shoulder, I was out on and off for a year, played about 3 games that season. My knee is a longer one, but it's not painful. My shoulder was really painful. It's a really intricate, quite a heavy duty surgery. My knee is a lot cleaner. It's more of a load issue. So it's a really slow return to run to loading it, which is frustrating for me. I'm having probably a harder time with this injury than I have any of my other injuries, because a lot of the other injuries are based around, I can't do that because it hurts, or I can't do that because it hasn't been in that range for a while, or things like that. Like, you have to get your strength back in it. But with the surgery I had in my knee, I still have all my strength. I still have all my ligaments at all levels. They were actually really surprised with how pristine my whole knee looked. They were so, the amount of rugby you played and how long you played, they're like, we didn't expect that. So that's always
a positive.
Lovely to hear. However, yeah, it's one of those things. It's very much a waiting. It's a patient game. It's a time game, which is something I'm not very good at waiting. I'm not great at that. It really depends on your injury. It depends on the support you have. I have some brilliant support here at Bristol. One of the main reasons I stay at Bristol is that the strength and conditioning and the physio staff and the facility and the everything around here, the people are really supportive. So that makes a massive difference. Other times I haven't had that around me and it has been tough, but generally, for me, it's about wanting to come back and wanting to come back stronger. So actually, how do you look at the time? When I first got told I was going to be out for 6 months, I went, well, there's a few things I want to get better at that I haven't had the opportunity to, because when you play rugby frequently, and I was very lucky, I had a few years of playing rugby back to back every weekend, every tournament. I think last year I missed one game and it was due to selection. It wasn't due to, it wasn't injury or being unfit or unwell. So I'm very lucky I had that time period, but it takes a toll on your body, takes a toll on your health. You know, every Friday you're getting as many carbs in as you can because you've got to get loaded for the game, and you're recovering as quickly as can. So you eat, like, there's a lot of things. It's hard to kind of always have those goals outside of rugby when you've got a game every week. You've got something to really focus on. So it comes down to, I kind of looked at it this time as in, like, what do I want to do off the pitch? Is there things I want to do? Well, yeah, I want to start going to art classes. I want to start getting more involved with the charity I'm an ambassador for. I want to start having different conversations with different people. Is there an opportunity to do some media roles? Things that I'd never had access to before. And yeah, sometimes it's tough. Last week was a hard week because the surgeon was like, you've got another 3 weeks of doing just on the ski erg. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot do this anymore. I've spent 4 weeks already staring at a wall. But then this week's different. I was allowed to cycle, and it just, that, you know, that's a massive, it sounds so silly now, but when you can't do something, it's such an, when you can do it again, you kind of are like, wow, this is amazing. You take it for granted. So I'd say it's very wavy. Just make sure you have good people around you. Make sure you have goals that you want to do. And make sure you tell people that it's okay if you feel sad. It's okay if you're not having a good day. It's okay if you're having a bad week. But don't keep it to yourself, because that's when it can become a bad month, a bad 6 weeks. You know, you don't want that. That's what people are there for, to pick you up. So yeah. But for me personally, it's about how do I come back even stronger?
Yeah.
How do I come back the best I can be? And well rested, because you never get a chance to rest in rugby.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I think that's so important, what you were saying there as well, about, you know, finding the things that you love outside of rugby is so important, because again, your careers can be quite short as an athlete. There's life outside of rugby as well, isn't it? And I guess one of your loves that I've heard outside of rugby is musical theatre. Can you tell us about that? And I guess, what is it about musical theatre you love, I guess?
To be fair, my partner always says to me, go, if you went to rugby play, you'd be on the theatre or something. She's <You're> so dramatic. But I'm very shy, so it's probably a side of me that not really anyone sees unless you're probably extremely close. I'd say my sister and my partner and my family are the only people that have ever seen that side. But I love it. I think it's great. I think it's a world I've always loved the theatre. My sister's 10 and 11 years older than me. So when I was growing up, I would go to their dance classes. Like, my sister was in a really good production of Chicago, and I remember watching that being like, wow, this is amazing. And just the singing and the storylines together, I just think it's incredible. And fit, my auntie was involved in musical theatre as well, more opera, but I just found it's an escape of some sort. It's like going to the cinema. I love the cinema because it presses pause. You don't think about anything other than, oh, what's the storyline? What did he just say? What like? You're like, oh, this is really good. You get really involved into it. I've always loved it. I love Hairspray, all that kind of stuff, right up my street.
What would you say is your favourite musical? Because I love musicals as well. My favourite is probably Wicked. I've seen it a few times.
Yeah.
But what would you say yours is?
Wicked is good. That's on in Bristol at the minute, actually. So I'm going to find some time to head down to see that. But I went to see Moulin Rouge, actually, in the theatre. If you have time to go to London to see a show, go to see Moulin Rouge. It's funny. It's really good. Just as a whole performance, it's brilliant. But my family love Dreamgirls. I don't know if you've ever seen
it. I love Dreamgirls. I saw it when it came to Cardiff a couple of years ago. It was amazing. And I love the film as well. So that was, it was incredible.
Yeah.
I love Beyonce. I love the film as well.
Yeah, it's so good. My dad, we used to drive to like France for a holiday with me and my two sisters and my mum. And we would watch like back-to-back, Moulin Rouge, Chicago, Dreamgirls, Hairspray, and I think he had enough. He had enough.
I love musicals. I think there's just something uplifting about them, isn't there? And there's always a lesson, and I feel like in a musical, there's always like something, I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I feel like there's always a lesson. Going back to you then, personal and your rugby career, looking forward now, what are your goals within the next year or so?
So one of my off the pitch goals is my nephew is to be fair, both my nephews have been diagnosed, one with ADHD and autism, and one that's finding, you know, so little, he's finding out what kind of things that he needs to focus on. So for me, it's about kind of making it, I didn't know a lot about neurodiversity, even though I'm dyslexic. I just thought, oh, I couldn't read and write properly. But actually there's a whole scope of things that comes under a massive bracket of different things. It's very relatable, like in terms of like you're such a visual learner, you think in visions rather than thoughts, and there's just so many different ways. And I struggled in school to fit into that kind of how you're meant to fit into, which is English, math, science. I had to work really, really hard. It was very, very creative, because dyslexics are generally really creative, but in terms of actually getting it down to what the examiners wanted, I couldn't do it. I struggled with it, but I couldn't do it how they wanted me to do it, even though I knew all the information. I never fitted into that role. So since work, like being with Finley, and absolutely adore him. I see how hard school is and how hard, to be fair, everyday life is really challenging for him. And it's not something that I think is massively spoken about. People that are really high functioning but have autism, have ADHD, have other things that come under that kind of neurodiverse bracket. The big one for me is working with the Wooden Spoon to try and promote that. How can we get more sensory rooms involved? Hopefully there's a big one going to be announced soon, which I'm really proud to be a part of, and I know it'll be really helpful for Finley. We're also trying to get more access to terms of like sensory bags and stuff to rugby games. How do we get it? How can it be more inclusive for people with those needs? And particularly for me as well, my sister's my biggest fan. Finley can't cope with the crowds and that we're getting now to our games, and he can't come and watch, but he'll watch. He knows every single name on the team. He asks me when I go home, oh, where's Hannah Bottoman? Where's Holly Aitchison? Why are they not with you? I'm like, well, because we all live different lives. he wants to know. So I think that there must be so many other people out there that have their favourite rugby players, and it's hard for those families to go and access that because the access isn't there. So that's one of my biggest things at the minute, is kind of pushing that. How do we get that better in all different sports? My other thing in terms of in rugby, yeah, I would love to continue to push boundaries, push barriers, keep promoting not being yourself, essentially, not being put into a box, getting some fun line breaks, which will be harder and harder because teams are getting better and better. So that's a big focus on me and myself, is I'd love to continue to push and be thought as one of the best players, but also I just want people to be inspired to play and to not really worry about themselves. So that's kind of my rugby career, is just want to continue working hard, continue being successful in that regard. I think every rugby player would want that as well as inspiring the next generation. So they're probably my two passion right now at the minute, and I don't know, I can't think of any right now.
No,
off the top of my head, but
fantastic. It's amazing to hear that the work you're doing with the Wooden Spoon, and I think when it's something that you're so passionate about as well, and being able to use that platform that you've built through rugby, I think it's amazing when I guess your two passions combine, isn't it? It's fantastic to hear that you're doing some stuff.
I think it's easy for children with ADHD and or autism or in that neurodiverse bracket to get labelled as naughty or misbehaving, or when actually it's just it's a sensory need. They're either overwhelmed or they've been overstimulated, or actually something they're not feeling very well, but they don't know how to articulate it. They don't know how that feels. Tiny things like having access to a safe space, whether that be a cupboard in a school that has some nice lights in, that they can do some, that has some nice things that they can feel, like things like that. I opened a sensory room in a school in Somerset the other weekend, and that was amazing to see. I wished for Finley that he had that access, but he doesn't in his school. So I think it's amazing that it can be part of something that promotes that, because I know how important it is for the families as well. And for all children to have time to have a safe space to recognise that actually not everyone learns in the same way. People are different, and that's okay. So that's probably the biggest thing I'm an advocate for. And yeah, super passionate that I can link that up with rugby and have the context that I can to try and promote it and make it better for families.
Yeah, I think it's very special that you're using your platform in such a nice way. And I think, if more families knew that you were doing so much work to make their children's lives easier and enable them to go watch rugby games, and like you said, most children can't cope with it. My brother's neurodiverse, so I know exactly how it is. And sometimes if he's upset, he gets angry because he can't tell anyone. And I think as long as, there's a lot of stigma around it, and as long as people get educated on why certain children act a certain way, I think a lot more people will be a lot more understanding.
And even in adult life, I think now there's a lot of probably rugby clubs that have come and join the rugby session for people with neurodiversity or disabilities. There's a lot of that goes on, which is brilliant, but it's all kind of children or grassroots based. I was thinking more, okay, in this professional setting, if it was something that Finley wanted to do, he would not be able to cope. He could be the best rugby player in the world, and he couldn't cope with the demand that people have put on, the kind of rigidness, because it can be very much like a school setting or an army setting sometimes. You have a lot of pressure, high achieving, you've got to do it in certain times, you've got to wear certain clothes, you don't get to pick the kit, you know, things like that. And I was thinking, if Finley was sat in that room, he would struggle with that, and then he would get labelled as an angry or emotional person, and that he's not. He's lovely. He is.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong, he has his, he's angry, like everyone is angry, but a lot of the time there's something not quite right. There's an issue there. A lot of the time he is lovely, caring, hugging. He really cares. He is very smart. He's really good at sport. So that's the next thing I also want to do, is like, how can we make it more accessible for people who are neurodivergent, that are high, high performing and high performance environments? How do we make that better for them as well? Because there's probably people within the team now that don't know that they're neurotypical, not neurotypical, and find it hard, and get labelled as emotional or stressy and that angry. Really, the problem. I believe there could be something really easy, like access to a sensory room, access to sitting with your headphones, and something that they find easy. There's not that support there because I think it's a massive unknown. So that's another thing I'd like to kind of have a little look into as well.
Yeah, brilliant. It's well done for, I guess, raising awareness for it, because as you mentioned, there are probably so many adults that they don't realise. And I think the work that you're doing is fantastic. And yeah, it's great. It's great to see you using your platform for such positivity. It's fantastic to hear, especially, I guess post rugby as well, that's something you would, continue to do. But that's fantastic. But I have to move on to, of course, next year. There is the World Cup and it's in England. Is this something, I guess, you are aiming to get fit for, to aiming to go to? And I guess there's a lot of pressure on the England team for this World Cup, being home and, getting so close the past couple of World Cups as well. And winning the WXV recently. So what is that like as an England player going into a home World Cup?
I think this time around for me might be very different for other people, but I've been to 2 World Cups. One is like a little rookie, didn't know what was going on, thought I was in the best team in the world, lost it in the last 10, 20 minutes. But second World Cup, there was a bit of a pause. I worked really hard. I said, I'm not going to lose it this time. I'm going to do everything I can to not lose it. Lost it in the last 20 minutes. So I think this time I'm taking more of an approach as, I want to really enjoy it. It's in England, so family, friends can come. It's spread across the country. So I want to make sure that I do inspire other people. I do really invest in the fans and say, thank you for coming, help grow our game. But I want to enjoy it. I think the pressure needs to be come off of us, if I'm perfectly honest. I think we are a high-achieving team. We are a well-performing team. We know that that's factual. I think when we get into those situations where everyone is expecting you to win, that's a pressure that is extremely hard to deal with, and it's a pressure where if you make one mistake, you think you've lost. And not saying that that's necessarily what happened in the last 2 World Cups, but I think actually if we go in with the mindset that we just want to play the best rugby we can, we want to be the best players we can be, we want to be that best team that we can be and enjoy that, I think we'll come away with the trophy this time. I think when it's hard when you're in an environment and in professional sport, the trophy is what you have to focus on because that's what you're working towards. For me, I think it's going to be more personally. I really want to enjoy it. I want to enjoy the hard work. I want to enjoy the high pressure environments. I want to thrive in that kind of area and not be afraid to lose another one, because it's probably it'll come down to the day. We might win it. We might not. We might not get there. We might lose the semi-final. There's so many things that you have no control over. So I would love to win this one. I'd absolutely love to win. So I'm losing 3 in a row, I think, might take its toll, but I want to enjoy it. I want to try and just thrive in it. I want to make it special. I want to inspire so many people to pick up a lot of people and actually to be whoever they want to be and kind of, be their best advocates for themselves.
How do you deal with those losses whilst under so much pressure?
The first time was hard because I was young and I really thought that I was in this amazing team with Rocky, Tam, players like that. And then when we lost it, and I was like, oh, I don't think we'll ever have as good a team as this again, because this is what I grew up watching, these elite players. So the first one was hard, and I was really young. I was like 18, 19 years old, or I might have been 20 by that time, but I was still in university. You are really young in that period of time still, even though you feel like you're old. So that one was hard. That one was hard. And then that's when I took the next steps to be like, right, I'm going to work as hard as I can. There's nothing I could have done. I don't want to turn around and leave in the World Cup and say, I wish I did more of that. And that was my kind of thing for the next 5 years. When we lost the second one, the most recent one, I just remember thinking, oh, God. Oh, man, I really thought we had that one. Like, it was a different feeling. It was like, it was more like we lost in the day. We didn't get outplayed. It was an unfortunate day. We had so many things behind us. We picked up a few massive injuries in that tournament to key players. We unfortunately had a quite harsh red card, although, you know, we've got to look after head collisions. I think that had a massive sway in the game. And I just think it wasn't our day. It just wasn't our day. It wasn't our time. Where I feel like this one, okay, it could be our time. We've got a really good supportive nation behind us, trying to sell out Twickenham. It kind of feels exciting. Everyone's kind of buzzing about it, which is nice to have that little buzz coming through. So I think how you deal with it, it depends how long you've been in the squad, where you're up to. I think there's a lot of players that were new in the most recent World Cup, and probably in the same stage I was at when I lost my first World Cup, and was like, right, I'm going to work hard. I don't want to do, but it's not in your control. All you can do is be the best version. You would aim to do that every day, or not. It's not always easy. You wake up thinking, oh, I just want to lay in bed today. But it's just something part and parcel of the game. And I think if once you get to this level, it becomes an innate response. You can't skip it, because you just think, I don't want to lose again. I don't want to lose again. So yeah.
Yeah, I guess that is sport. That's what it's all about, isn't it? You either win or you lose. And it's all part of what you've got to deal with, I guess. But, you know, obviously we wish you all the best. We are Welsh, but definitely wish you all the best as well. No, it's fantastic to see you achieving so many incredible things through your career, both on and off the field as well. It's fantastic. But as a role model for aspiring female rugby players, what advice would you give to young girls who dream of pursuing a career in the sport?
I think, one, don't be afraid of any stigma around it. One, it's vanishing. Also, two, not true. You can be whoever you want to be. If you get to be, you can wash it off. There's so many things. And a lot of women come into rugby later in life. I wish I had this at school. So I think if you can have the confidence to give it a go, give it a go, because you might absolutely love it. It might change the course of what you thought you liked. So that'd be my first thing. And two, kind of make sure you enjoy it. And go to the fun things. Go and enjoy the socials. Rugby's a social sport. You have a team of 15 people plus, the bench, plus the people that train with you every day. We've got a squad of 40, I think, at Bristol. So go to those socials, go and enjoy, go and make friends. I've got friends that I played with at under 15 that I'm still best friends with now, friends I played with at uni that I'm still best friends with now. So I'm sure you'll find your group of people within, 40 people coming to do something. I'm sure you'll find one friend that, will probably last a long time. So I think for me, it's about enjoyment and kind of finding that confidence to, you can be whatever you want to be, you can do whatever you want to do. Great. Get a good bunch of people around you and just go and have a laugh, I'd say.
Awesome advice.
Yeah, definitely.
At the end of every episode that we do, we ask three random questions. So it's for our listeners, basically, to get to know you a little bit more. So it's... Yeah, you'll have to.
I love it, random as well. To be fair.
Yeah, they are random. And you'll have to think on the spot. But just try your best. first question is a nice one. It's who would you say is your hero and why?
To be in all honesty, my sister, Sammy. I have two sisters, so I also love my other sister very, very much. I don't want her to get upset, but the amount of energy and time and the resources she goes through and everything she does to make sure Finley's life is as best as it can be, even on his most difficult days, I think fair play to her. I think what she does is amazing for her, for my two nephews. And it inspires me to keep working hard and even to keep pushing through. So for me, it is her. And the amount of work she does to understand and learn and try new ways and do the best thing she can for those guys, I just think is absolutely phenomenal. So yeah, she's probably my closest hero, someone I really look up to and admire. And then I guess in a sporting way, look, anyone that's elite. I actually love Serena Williams. I think she's amazing. I think she's been brilliant. I also really, really used to love Usain Bolt when I was younger.
Usain Bolt. He was like an idol.
Yeah, he was amazing. Yeah. I just loved that he was so different and compared to the normal sprinters at that time. He was so much taller. He was very, you know, energetic. And I just love that Serena Williams has been so, so successful. And kind of is very much, you know, like woman power out to women. And I find that really inspiring and it gives me confidence to kind of be like that in my sport and support women through that. So yeah, no, I think they're probably my two that growing up and even now I think I still really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely good choices there. One thing I would say about Serena Williams, actually, I watched last night the new, I don't know if you've heard of the new Copper 71 film that's coming out.
Yeah.
So that's coming out as part of International Women's Day, but her and her sister, Venus, they both produced this new film coming out, and it's about, it's not about rugby, but it's about football, which was crazy when I realised that they were producing it, and they voice over it as well, and it's about the World Cup that happened in 1971, which has kind of been erased from history. And over 100,000 fans went to watch this World Cup in 1971 for women in football. And I just thought it was amazing that Serena Williams and her sister both kind of wanted to bring this story out. So definitely great choices there that you've picked as your heroes. So I agree, brilliant. So our next question is, if there was a zombie apocalypse, who would be the three people from sports that you would have on your team to help you get out of it?
On sport? I don't know. I would not survive. So I would be gone. I think this question is not a good question because I would be like, well, that must be the end then. Bye. I'm terrified of that stuff. So I think I'd be at detriment to three people I'd pick. So I don't know if I can do it.
Okay, can I change it if you think that? What would be your top three? Anybody, dinner party guests?
I mean, that's the usual question, yes. So I don't know why I just had to change it.
Right, dinner party guests. Anyone in the world? It's so hard on the spot. who do I really like? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm taking ages. I can't.
I can't even answer the question myself. So. It's all good.
I end up like saying five people, so it's like it's fine.
I would love to be fair. I do actually like Alan Carr. I think he's really funny. I'd love to like just chat to him and have like, and also probably Adele on that front. I think those two would be so funny together.
Oh, they would. Good choice.
I'd like to be a part of that. Probably. I was actually listening to this podcast. This is a really rogue one. I was listening to this podcast. I can't remember his name, but it was really interesting. And it was about a guy who had kind of, he has this new, I guess it's not new for him, but it's new for me because I was just listening to it, about Just Say It. And it was kind of about gratitude and how we always kind of celebrate people when they pass away, but we never tell them when they're alive, how important they are to us. And I thought what he was saying was absolutely amazing. So I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I would invite him because purely I just think what an amazing kind of thought and initiative to start pushing out to people. So that would be kind of my rogue one, because I think what a brilliant kind of aspect of life to, and he sounds like he had an amazing life. So I'd invite him, but that's only because I've just recently been listening to him as well. Maybe Serena Williams. I'd love to know about her passions and what you've just said about the film she's made and that. So yeah, I'd say those guys. I think that would be quite a funny. It'd be so totally different one side of the table to the other side of the table. But yeah, I think it would be fun.
Yeah, you'd have some interesting conversations around that table.
Yeah,
definitely.
So the last question then is, what is your favourite quote and why?
My favourite quote, which I have been called cheesy for it before, I don't really care, is that I like the quote, if you shoot for the moon, even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. Because for me, it's about if you work hard, you kind of keep putting in the hard graft, you're shooting for where you want to be, it might turn out that that's not the right thing for you, or the opportunity's not there or whatever, but you'll land somewhere pretty near to whatever you want to be. And it might be a totally different avenue, but it will be just as successful. So for me, I kind of like that. I love that. Also kind of like shooting for the moon. The moon's really far away. There's like no barrier to the moon, like, you know, stuff like that. Or there's no kind of space in general is so unknown. There's no limits there. There's nothing like that we know of. So for me, it also is kind of that there's no box to be put in. It's kind of that kind of unknown. Just go and try, be yourself, and success will kind of follow you around that. So I actually do have a tattoo of like a little rocket and a thing, which is really terrible. It's like Saturn and then a rocket. I did get it when I was young and I didn't look after it very well, so it has fallen out of it. But yeah, that's why it's there. And everyone goes, oh, but that's not me, that's Saturn. And I go, I don't care, it looks better.
that's lovely.
Yeah, so that's my favourite thing. That's kind of the like aspirations around it, yeah.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. And I love that, I guess the meaning that you've given to that quote as well. That's maybe looking at it in, I guess, a different way when you said there was no barriers, you know, on the way to the moon. I think that's fantastic. Yeah, brilliant. That's a really good quote. Love it. Really inspirational.
Thank you.
And a little unique fact about you that I don't know, not many would know probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah, my friends just always see it and go, oh, God.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us on the podcast. It's honestly been a pleasure to have you. You know, I followed your career and it's great to chat to you and get to find out about you a bit more. So thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to have you on.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much. It's been really nice. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
We would just like to say a big thank you for listening to our podcast, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please don't forget to give us a like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts, and also hit the follow button on our social media @A Goal in Mind Podcast, where you can keep up to date with all our guests.